And there shall be signs in the sun, and in the moon, and in the stars, and upon the earth distress of nations with perplexity, the sea and the waves roaring, men's hearts failing them for fear, and for looking after those things which are coming on the earth, for the powers of heaven shall be shaken. One man, one microphone, one mission, one message. True News, the only newscast reporting the countdown to the second coming of Jesus Christ. Here is End Time Newsman, Rick Wiles.
This is True News, uncensored news, views, and commentary. Welcome to the program. I'm Rick Wiles. Let's recap some of the big news stories over the past 3 months that indicate that something big is about to happen regarding the U.S. dollar. February 3rd, New World Order Ambassador Henry Kissinger met privately in Moscow with Russian President Vladimir Putin. February 10 and 11, Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman bin Abdulaziz attended a NATO summit in Brussels. March 11, John Kerry traveled to Saudi Arabia. He went to the vicinity where 350,000 soldiers were participating in the Northern Thunder military drill in preparation of a future invasion of Syria. March 16, Putin began surprise withdrawal of Russian military forces in Syria. March 29, Britain's Foreign Minister Michael Fallon secretly visited Saudi Arabia to meet with the Crown Prince. April 3rd, 11.5 million private documents stolen from a Panamanian law firm were published online and in newspapers around the world. The official story was that an insider gave the documents to the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, a far-left outfit funded by George Soros and leftist foundations. April 4th, Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman bin Abdulaziz announced plans to sell off state-owned Aramco for $2.5 trillion, transfer the money to a public investment fund, which would then purchase Microsoft, Apple, and two other giant global corporations. April 6, U.S. House Speaker Paul Ryan led a high-level delegation of U.S. members of Congress to Saudi Arabia to meet King Salman at his palace. April 9, the last four Federal Reserve chiefs held an unprecedented joint meeting. Attending were Janet Yellen, Ben Bernanke, Alan Greenspan, and Paul Volcker. They met in the International House in New York City, a facility funded by the Rockefellers. April 10, CBS News 60 Minutes interviewed key members of the September 11 Investigative Commission, who called for the release of 28 classified pages of documents that allegedly link Saudi Arabia to the 9/11 attacks on America. April 11, an insolvent Austrian bank was rescued from bankruptcy by the use of the new EU procedure for bail-ins. April 11, Italian government finance officials convened an emergency meeting to deal with the insolvency of Italian banks. April 11 through the 13th, an unprecedented three-day meeting of the U.S. Federal Reserve's Board of Governors was held. April 11, Fed Chairman Janet Yellen met with both Barack Obama and Joe Biden. April 11 through the 12th, Russian fighter jets conducted 31 mock attack runs on the U.S. naval destroyer Donald Cook in the Baltic Sea. April 12 through the 17th, the IMF and the World Bank met in Washington. April 12, Wall Street Journal published leaked documents from the Fed and the FDIC revealing that five of the eight biggest banks in America don't have enough liquidity to survive another financial crisis. April 13 to the 15, G20 finance ministers and central bank governors convened in Washington. April 14, Germany's Deutsche Bank admitted to rigging gold and silver prices and agreed to name other accomplices. April 19, China announced a yuan-denominated gold benchmark on the Shanghai Gold Exchange. April 20, U.S. Defense Secretary Ash Carter traveled to Saudi Arabia and met with Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman bin Abdulaziz. April 21, Barack Obama traveled to Saudi Arabia and met with King Salman. And April 24, Bloomberg reported that the Bank of Japan is now in the top 10 holders of stock shares in 90% of Japanese companies traded on its stock market. What does this flurry of meetings and announcements mean? Is there a tectonic shift coming soon to the global financial system? Financial analyst and newsletter publisher Jim Willey is on the telephone. He is the publisher of the Hat Trick Letter,
the most comprehensive monthly report in the world about the breakup of the old existing financial order and the emergence of a new world order in global finance. You can subscribe at goldenjackass.com. Jim, always a pleasure to have you on the program. Over the last 3 months, this is a sweeping array of meetings at the highest levels that indicate that something big is about to happen.
Yes, I started talking back at the Christmas holiday. I did a string of interviews, and in each interview I mentioned how the new year of 2016 would be loaded with highly disruptive events toward the paradigm shift. Now, look up paradigm in a dictionary. You see model, scheme, etc. We're seeing a shift in progress of power moving from west to east. And the West is having numerous meetings at the highest level in order to handle and manage and try to react to their lost power, to the disruptions to the system, and possibly, probably, a banking system breakdown. You mentioned a lot of items, events on your chronology. I'd like to go backwards because I put a little arrow on four of them. Deutsche Bank announced gold market rigging. That is going to open the Western doors for viewing the corruption in the gold market at the same time Shanghai opens up their gold fix, the gold pricing fix, and the RMB-backed gold futures contract that will actually deliver on gold. What a novel concept. A gold contract that will deliver on gold. Imagine buying a car where they tell you when you look to pick up the key, sorry, you can't buy a car here. You can't pick up your car here, but you can buy another one. How absurd is that? Okay, then you have the what I call the sandbagging of the Saudis. I've been talking for 2 years about how the UBS and Credit Suisse crime scenes were really nothing more than ruses for the British and American bankers to take control of UBS, Credit Suisse, and to steal the Arab gold. Mission accomplished. Now you have the meetings of the president, vice president, Federal Reserve chairman, and you left out one, the White Dragon Society member, who called the meeting. The meeting was to inform them that at a future unspecified date, the dollar would no longer be accepted in global trade.
Jim, for people who don't know what you're talking about, who and what is the White Dragon Society?
Well, it's ancient Chinese families.
Old dynasty money?
Yes, yes. It's sad, but most Americans don't know much about Chinese history. I did a little research when I was in college because I wanted to name a Siamese cat, and I named him Ming. I'm sorry, but I just had a Chinese-born client in Singapore send me a list of the dynasties of China and the years, the Han, the Wu, the Hua, the Ming, the King, with a Q, Q-I-N-G, King. Wow, they go back 5,000 years. Okay, now, the United States has a bunch of elite folks. I'm going to get to the answer of what the White Dragons are. The Americans, U.S., has the Rockefellers. We've got a lot of others. We got Morgan. We've got, well, lately we've got Gates. And some really vile characters like him. He's responsible. Bill Gates of Microsoft is responsible for 100,000 paralysis cases in India because he developed a wonderful polio vaccine. He's now a wanted criminal in India. Okay, we've got a lot of elite. Okay, we've got Carnegie. We've got all kinds of different magnates from the 19th century. Edison, that's General Electric. We got Ford. We got all kinds of elites. Well, they accumulated wealth and passed it on with trusts. So the U.S.-based elites are in command of a few trillion dollars, probably. let's ignore Papa Bush because his $5 trillion is all illicit from narcotics. So let's leave Bush out. Let's leave Clinton out. They stole $1.5 trillion out of Fannie Mae. So let's leave Clinton and Bush out. They are best friends that cross the Democrat-Republican line and make a mockery of political alignment. Okay, the Chinese have the same, Rick. They've got dozens and dozens of wealthy families, and they stay to the sidelines, stay in the shadows. Some control the Communist Party, and they've got their own internal conflicts. The previous president of China from 6 or 8 years ago is under all kinds of investigations for corruption by President Xi, X-I, Jinpao Xi. Okay, so the Chinese have the White Dragon Society, and they've got the Red Family, the White Family, and a number of other ones that I cannot keep honestly straight. But I do know that the White Dragons control roughly 150,000 tons of gold. It's not part of the Chinese government official reserves. That statement coming out every year by the IMF is an utter joke. The Russians have 25 to 30,000 tons. The Chinese have ready and willing and able about 25 or 30,000 tons. But when you count all the private families, they have 150,000 tons. When the U.S. announces their tonnage of gold, they mentioned deep storage gold, but when it was legitimate, did they announce what the Bush, Rockefeller, and Clinton gold vaults contained? No! It's Fort Knox, which was pillaged. That's all they mentioned. Their official gold reserves never include private families. So the point was that the White Dragons called the meeting with the president, vice president, banking officials, congressional leaders, and Federal Reserve chairs, along with past chairs going back to Volcker. Bernanke, Greenspan, and Volcker. Boy, that's like a war situation room, is it not? Yes, it is, exactly, because they were told that the dollar is going away and will not be accepted for trade payments at an unspecified future date. Maybe they did specify a date. Okay, so the last event of the four that I like to highlight is one you didn't have. And that was when Patriarch Kirill met Pope Francis of the Vatican. That was reading the Riot Act that the Satanists who are running the Western corporations, banks, and politics will no longer be in charge of the world. And they can take their child molestation and sacrifices and go out the door. The Vatican is the center of Western Satanism. Their banks, the black nobility, why are they called black? Because they wear black robes during Satanist ceremonies. Why are they called Illuminati? One of the funniest word etymologies that I've ever encountered is that Lucifer means Prince of Light. Lucifer, lux, Latin lux, Spanish luz, L-U-Z, translucent. Light coming through. Lucifer is the Prince of Light. I call it Prince of Darkness. I don't go along with their game. The Vatican is the center of global Satanism and is the headquarters for most of the narcotics and most of the security agencies like Mossad, MI6, and Langley. Okay. They read the Riot Act that Eastern, not mysticism, but Eastern Christianity is going to take control, and they wanted cooperation to do this peacefully to get the Satanists and their Agenda 21 of global destruction out the door. And meanwhile, they're going to install the gold standard to make sure that everything is fair. Now, I don't really care what the religions of the East are. What I care is they want fair commerce, Rick. Fair commerce and fair banking and fair savings and fair currencies with the gold standard. Trade, banking, currency, gold standard. The East favors it. I don't care if they're Taoist, Buddhists, or whatever, Confucius. I don't care. Many of them are Christian. The Russians tend to be Eastern Orthodox Christian. And Patriarch Kirill made a historical meeting to the Vatican. There's a lot of crap going on with the former Pope Benedict and the new Pope Francis. Benedict, I hear, was I had to learn some of these things. Pope Benedict, the German, Ratzinger, was on a cleanup mission, and he got kicked out. So what do they replace him with but the fascist pope from Argentina, who's under murder investigations, but they will be on suspended hold while he's pope. 40,000 mostly young Argentinians in the 1970 decade were disappeared, murdered. My brother's second wife is a woman from Buenos Aires, and I had a dinner with her back in 2005. I remember it like yesterday, where I asked her about the disappeared ones. Did you know any? And she knew two. I said, how many were there? She said, oh, gosh, 30 or 40,000 of them, Jim. I mean, every church had a big poster where they put pictures. Have you seen my brother? Have you seen my husband?
What was Pope Francis's connection to the disappearance of these people?
He was a bishop of Buenos Aires, and he was the best buddy of, I think his name is Videla, General Videla. I think I might have one letter off, but there's a general of the military junta in Argentina from the 1975-89 era. Pope Francis Bergoglio. Bergoglio was a best buddy and worked within the church to root out the activists and have them kidnapped. There are two murder investigations going on right now, and there's no statute of limitation on murder. He was very closely related to two of the murders, had a direct hand, and that murder investigation has been going on for several years. You know, they get political pressure to suspend it, and then it continues because someone didn't get paid off or someone doesn't like Bergoglio. I refuse to call him Pope Francis. He's the fascist pope.
You're referring to the Argentine death squads of the 70s.
Yes. Yes. They call them the disappeared ones. 40,000 of them.
All right. So Russian Patriarch Kirill laid down the law and told the Western Illuminati Luciferians that their day was over, and there was going to be a shift not only in the financial realm, but in the spiritual realm also. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, I believe there is a spiritual side to that, yes. But they were basically told that the central bank franchise system, the Rothschilds, Rothschild is one of the biggest Satanists in the world. So is David Rockefeller. They don't like to talk about it. I don't want to get into religion and Judaism and all that, but there's a mix of the Satanists with that. I call it hiding in the synagogue. The Satanists are hiding in the synagogue. They don't go to the synagogue. They just hide with the synagogue dogma. But they were told that the Western Central Bank franchise system was going to be dissolved. They would either conform or go away. By conform, I mean follow the gold standard. And the White Dragons have offered the U.S. government a lease of, let's just call it 10,000 tons of gold. And when you hear the argument that, oh, there's not enough gold to go around to cover all the money, that's because we polluted with so much money, false money. We're up something like tenfold in the money supply since the 80s and 90s. Okay, there's plenty of gold out there. Just reprice it at $10,000 an ounce. And that's what's coming. The White Dragons say, we want a price range of $10,000 to $12,000 per ounce for gold, and we want a price range of $250 to $400 for silver per ounce. And get that gold-silver ratio back in line about 30 to 1. That's what the East wants. So they told the Western representative in the Vatican, which does a lot of gold leasing to London and Wall Street. Whenever you hear about the gold leasing to the big central banks to alleviate a problem and to make sure that everything goes smoothly and no gold default, they always mention Basel, Switzerland, the Bank for International Settlements. They never mention the Vatican. Well, that's the other one. And there's another one. It's called the Bush Gold Vaults. gosh, I had an interesting event. I may have told you this story, but I'll try to be real quick. It was about September of 2010. A guy got on the elevator, said to me, it was Cato, my source from the military. He said, Jim, check with your man, The Voice, because Bank of America just lent $13 billion to cover a shortfall, and it came from Bush. And I said, wow. So I made an email message to The Voice, and I kept it vague. I said, a Wall Street bank made a multi-billion dollar overnight patch loan from a private elite family to cover a deficit and avoid the default. Any details? He wrote back, yeah, Bush, $13 billion, Bank of America. And that's how I confirm things, Rick. I hold back and let the source fill in the blanks to see if they coincide, and they do. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of gold movement. One of the most ironic stories, we heard about a year ago and 2 years ago, the big word was rehypothecation. And basically theft of private gold and replacement with certificates and just telling them like it or lump it. You know, you've got a certificate. You'll never see your gold again. Okay, well, apparently there are about 7 major gold vaults in the world. And they keep things moving. They send it to central banks. They send it to the COMEX and LBMA in London. And The Voice sent me a message. I remember where I was looking out my window in the office. That's how I date things because I move around a lot. I like to be a moving target, but you know, you never really avoid being a target in this game. So it was the summer of 2014. I was looking out on a large park, and The Voice wrote a message to me and said, Jim, it's really kind of funny. The Bushes just had a large amount of their stolen gold rehypothecated, and it ended up going to China. Oh, I mean, I love stories like that. They did not keep an adequate watch and control on their vast gold warehouse, so it's largely empty, and the Bushes are furious. It's really just one Bush. It's Papa Bush. The rest are kind of morons. I mean, Jeb is dumb as a post. George Jr. is dumber than a post, dumber than a rock. Jeb and George are in the public view, but the other one, can't think of his name. He's involved in the Silverado bank scandal. He's one of the brighter ones. That's why.
Neil Bush.
Yeah, he was in charge of a lot of electricity and, you know, demolition, middle of the night stuff in the World Trade Center. He had the electricity contract, so that was a pretty handy move. All right, so there are a lot of things going on. Your chronology hit a lot of things, but the big thing right now, Rick, is the Shanghai event.
Explain to our audience what happened on April 19 in Shanghai.
They really went live. They've been doing a lot of planning. They've got two big features. One is the gold fix. With all the corruption in the gold market, you know, revelations from Deutsche Bank and Barclays, and no one ever went to jail in London or in Deutsche Bank or in Wall Street. They just committed trillion-dollar fraud and said, well, what are you going to do about it? We can't prosecute this because it would bring down the system. All right, so fine. China had their own idea. They said, okay, we're going to shut down the gold fix in London, which is an overnight price determination, and because it was loaded with corruption and smoke-filled rooms and deals and insider trading among the London and New York banks that profited from the opening. They just made so much easy money. Now that's going to go away because Shanghai took control of the London gold fix, and now it's the Shanghai gold fix. So they've been signing up lots of banks. And because of the strong regulatory transparency, many Western banks didn't want to participate. But the Shanghai boys are smart, and they said, okay, if you don't participate, then you cannot participate in banking and gold market functions anywhere in China. So they fell in line and decided to go in and participate, like ANZ, an Australian bank, and Standard Chartered, another Western bank that has a lot of Asian ties. Okay, they've lined up the biggest of the jewelry dealers. There are a lot of participants now in the Shanghai gold fix. The second thing they set up was the RMB, Chinese currency, RMB-based gold futures contract. And that's a thing of beauty because they deliver on gold and don't price it in dollars. So what you might see very soon is no dollar pricing for gold. That's what I want to see. And we're going to have trouble knowing, well, what's the price of gold? I don't know, but I don't care that it's not going to be priced in dollars. I want it to be properly priced. I've been saying a long time, Rick, the dollar's going to rise, then rise some more, finally vanish. When it does, you're not going to see a dollar-based gold price.
All right, Jim, right now I'm looking at Bloomberg.com, and gold is currently at this moment at $1,242.05, U.S. dollars. So we are now going to a place where we're going to see gold priced in Chinese yuan?
That's what the gold price fix is going to be, I think. Yeah, eventually. Maybe not immediately, but when there's an RMB-priced gold futures contract, what does that mean? Price discovery. Not just for today, but for next month, for June, for September, for December. Those major contract expiration months, December, March, June, September. Okay, so price discovery is going to come in RMB terms for gold. Well, then eventually the gold price fix will be in RMB. And the whole West is going to be scrambling to come up with a legitimate currency because the Chinese also have said they're going to gold back their RMB currency. So what's the dollar worth? It's not what's the RMB worth. The question is, if you've got a new kid on the block that's gold-backed, namely the Chinese RMB, renminbi, also known formally as a yuan, if you've got a gold price in RMB or you've got a gold backing for the RMB, the big question is, what's the dollar worth? Because what backs the dollar? A bunch of hot air, howitzers from the military, cruise missiles from the military, and deep storage gold backed by $18 trillion worth of debt and an annual $1 trillion federal deficit and an annual $500 trillion trade deficit. So what backs the dollar? War and debt and arrogance. So that's going to go away, Rick, and we're left with a very big, difficult decision in the United States. How are we going to assure and guaranteed trade, import, shipping with containers that aren't empty, like what we send out? In the year 2015, the United States, in Los Angeles, San Francisco, New York, and New Jersey, exported 500,000 empty containers. That's one of our major exports now. Empty, stale air to go along with fraudulent bonds, laced vaccines, GMO foods, military hardware.
Jim, I'm going to give an analogy. If you had a tire that was super overinflated, it's so huge, this thing's ready to burst. You have two choices. You could pop it and get it over with quickly, or you could gradually deflate it over time. Are those the two options that China and Russia and the rest of the world are looking at regarding the U.S. dollar?
Yes, and based on the recent examples and attitudes and actions, there's no way to slowly let it out. It's going to either pop or just be pushed to the side. Okay, there's a third alternative. You pop it, you deflate it slowly, or you throw it in the dumpster.
So which one is it?
They're going to throw it in the dumpster. And the U.S. is going to have two alternatives. Come up with a fraudulent, yet more fraud in U.S. finance. They have one option of saying we're going to use our 8,000 tons of deep storage gold and back the dollar. But we're also going to include a lot of, say, Cushman oil facility and strategic oil reserve. And we're going to also use some of our gas reserves that are in giant tanks. So basically a deep storage false gold plus a real oil and real gas. So a precious metal energy combination backing the dollar. And my guess is that due to the Chinese instruction of independent audits for new currencies, They're in charge of the IMF, in case anybody hasn't realized that yet. The IMF is going to be doing some Chinese-ordered independent audits, and they're going to determine that the U.S. dollar is fraudulent.
Jim, 2 weeks ago, Treasury Secretary Jack Lew announced that Andrew Jackson's portrait will come off the $20 bill, be replaced by Harriet Tubman. Most people are interpreting this as this is the changing face of America. We're putting a black woman on our currency. Is there something deeper involved here? Are they preparing for a change of currency?
I think so, yes. Harriet Tubman would not have been my first choice. I have two first choices. Sounds silly. I have two favorite choices. George Washington Carver. Actually, three. George Washington Carver, Martin Luther King, and Frederick Douglass. Carver was a scientist known for the peanut research. Martin Luther King was a civil rights activist, and Frederick Douglass was an emancipation orator and not exactly a politician, but a real leader in the 19th century slavery movement, anti-slavery movement, Frederick Douglass. Harriet Tubman, I think, also fought the slavery, but Frederick Douglass is a striking facial figure with wild hair and a very determined look. Martin Luther King is a recognized figure. George Washington Carver might not be recognized, but his work certainly has been recognized. Okay, fine.
But to the heart of the question is, regardless of who they put on the money, is the purpose of the change to move the American people into a new form of currency? You've been telling us for years on this program that there are going to be two tiers of the U.S. dollar.
Yes. The international dollar will be all the dollars held outside the U.S., like in Switzerland, Panama, Hong Kong, etc. The internal dollars, I think, yes. To answer your question, to get away from these, you know, the figures on the bill, yes, I think we're being conditioned for new faces on the dollar toward a new dollar. Accepting a new dollar will be easy if they change the faces on a few of them. I mean, let's change the $50 bill and bring it back, because, you know, Grant's on it right now, but the $50 bill is going to be really important for buying a loaf of bread or a gallon of milk, because it's going to cost about that. Okay, I have a comment. It's nasty, but it's real.
Go for it.
We've got a Kenyan as president. Why not have more Africans on our bills if we're going to be a true third world nation? I just like them to be good, solid black Americans like Carver, King, and Douglass. Maybe they could put that woman in Selma, Alabama. What was her name? Insisted on riding on the bus, not in the back. Maybe put her on the $100 bill. Now, I love Franklin. Franklin is one of my heroes, and he's the face that I have for my Skype account. Franklin is one of the greatest Americans who ever lived. So let him stay on the 100. This is nasty. We're going to have a new currency, so they're maybe conditioning us with a new face. I mean, let's not replace Lincoln on the 5. Now, there's some significance here that you may not be looking at. Again, it's the figures, but Andrew Jackson was on the 20, is on the 20. 2 points of significance for the $20 bill. First of all, it is the most counterfeited bill in the world. It's not the $100 bill with Franklin on it. It's the 20 with Jackson on it. Iran is a major league counterfeiter. They don't like talking about that. Instead, they talk about the phony nuclear ambition risk. The second distinction of Andrew Jackson is he hated the central bankers. That was a long time ago.
Yeah, but the bankers still hate him.
They still hate him, and they hate what he stands for. So they're going to get rid of the one president who was the most anti-central bank, well, except for The $2 bill was Thomas Jefferson.
And that is the most important part of this change. It's the central banker's hatred for Andrew Jackson. That's at the core of this change. It's not Harriet Tubman. It's their hatred for Andrew Jackson.
Right. I think so, yes. And notice they made illegal the Confederate flag from other silly nonsense. So there's a lot going on here, Rick, but I think what we're going to get, you know, back to Shanghai for a second, because there's a big conclusion remark that I have. I think Shanghai, which is already, the Beijing officials in China have already said, we're sick and tired of your dumping paper gold contracts, paper silver contracts, to affect the price of gold and silver when you don't deliver on those contracts. So there's no physical movement, no equilibrium even remotely achieved regarding supply and demand to settle on a price. Now you look at the economics textbooks and you see supply curve, demand curve, and equilibrium is where they meet. No, that's for paper gold, not for actual physical gold, because there's an extreme shortage of both gold and silver. So what I think the Chinese are going to do is announce that they're again disgusted at the activity last week where $2 billion of paper gold were dumped and $1.5 billion of paper silver were dumped. Notice it's roughly the same volume. So it doesn't matter that it's a price difference. The price ratio is 60, 70, 80 to 1. Doesn't matter. But on a dollar volume basis, we have equal activity in gold and silver and have for 2 years. I think what China is going to do is they're going to have an overnight ping where they have a $100 or $150 higher gold price and have a higher $1.50 or $2 silver price. Call it a flick of the nose. Call it whatever you want. I call it a ping. Ping is a computer term. Give me a ping so I can, you know, get your IP address or attach your location in a military sense. The Chinese are going to jack up a nice little small quantum jump in the gold and silver price to see how it screws up the Western banks who play these games. And there'll be a mad scramble to push the gold price back down again with paper. And what we're going to get is a contest of whether paper can prevail in pushing it down or instead whether a bank fails, like Bank of America or Citigroup. It's going to be very interesting.
What would be the immediate aftermath of such a ping where the Chinese value gold and silver higher than what the West is doing in an equivalent amount of the respective currency? What would be the immediate aftermath?
Maybe HSBC in London goes into failure mode, or so does Citigroup. And there's all kinds of scrambling to patch a liquidity problem, which they will call it. It's not a liquidity problem. It's a solvency problem with an immediate liquidity aspect to it that spells bankruptcy. Insolvency plus illiquidity equals bankruptcy. A nice, easy formula. We've had U.S. banks and London banks insolvent for a long, long time. They remained liquid from the 0% policy and from QE. Those were not stimuli. They were instead liquidity devices. Notice that when we had QE, all the different, we call them the alphabet facilities. They're nothing more than assuring liquidity for the bankrupt insolvent banks. So they covered the illiquidity and made sure that they never had to declare bankruptcy. I think we're having some liquidity problems again. We're seeing major cracks in the treasury bond market. We're seeing reverse repo going out of control. We're seeing leverage go out of control. We're seeing failures to deliver on treasury bonds go out of control. That's evidence of the interest rate swap derivatives going haywire, and the actual bonds cannot keep up with the machinery on the derivative side. Everything's going haywire and breaking. The Chinese see this, so they say the timing's right. I noticed that I made a public article 2 weeks ago where I pointed out that the Shanghai gold fix was April 19th, right in the middle of the biggest Satanist event of the year, the celebration of fire. If you were to do an examination of all the major U.S. financial and societal explosions and events and disasters, you would find that over half of them occur in April, including the Titanic. There was a Satanist element to that, too, including the Lincoln assassination. I mean, not just Waco, Texas, and the Boston Marathon. It's a lot more than that. There were three enemies of John Pierpont Morgan on the Titanic. They were given free tickets by Morgan. And it went down in April.
Yeah, Jim, a few months ago, the London papers published reports that documents had been disclosed revealing the vast cover-up by Freemasonry in Great Britain of the Titanic sinking. How the key people in the investigation of the Titanic sinking were high-level Freemasons. That was in the front pages of all the London papers several months ago.
The cabal, Rick, is losing control of the press networks. It's getting really interesting now. By the way, of the three elites that were on the Titanic who perished, one of them was the founder of Macy's. And there were three. I should have saved that and printed and put it on the wall somewhere, but a client provided me the information. There's a lot more that went on regarding the Titanic.
Hey, who stole the money from the Bangladesh Central Bank's account at the New York Federal Reserve?
I don't know. Probably J.P. Morgan and Goldman Sachs. Aren't they behind most of the crime?
Well, of course, they blamed it on hackers in, where was it, Russia or someplace? I don't know if they ever...
Yeah, but the people who issued the press report are probably the perpetrators. I mean, I would love to issue a press report after I commit a crime, wouldn't you?
You know, how can somebody, what was it, $100 million? How does somebody steal $100 million from the New York Federal Reserve?
I don't know, but why don't you ask Robert Rubin how he stole the $5 billion from the Native American Indian Trust in Citibank? The stealing money is easy when you control the regulators, you control the police, and you control everything else. You control the attorney general. Where's the attorney general for any of the fraud in Wall Street banks in the last 5-6 years that totaled $238 billion in fines? It's probably $250 by now. I just wrote a sassy message to a client who, you know, he insulted me, and I insulted him back. I said, you know, what part of the $250 billion in fines and penalties for bond fraud regarding the mortgage industry did you not notice to indicate a crime scene? Oh, I'm sorry, $250 billion was settled, but there's no felony. Oh, okay, I understand very well, no felony. No, I don't know much about the Bangladesh case, honestly, and I don't really care.
All right, well, let me ask you about Saudi Arabia. We had this flurry of visits from Washington to Riyadh last month, or actually in the month of April. House Speaker Paul Ryan, a delegation of congressmen and senators, Ash Carter, Obama himself. Why was everybody going to Riyadh to meet with the king and his crown prince?
To tell them not to accept RMB currency on oil sales from China. I don't care what the press report says, Rick. I care about the reality.
Is that why 60 Minutes suddenly came out with the story that Obama may declassify the 28 pages of 9/11 documents that implicate Saudi Arabia?
Oh, I don't know, but how about the New York Police Department captain who wasn't permitted to testify at the commission about all the bombs he heard go off in the basement? I don't care about Saudi Arabia. That's a scapegoat. Look, we stole their gold out of UBS and Credit Suisse in Switzerland, and now we are making it impossible for them to retrieve $5 trillion, maybe only three. I mean, gosh, maybe it's only $3,000 billion in treasury bonds. For 40 years, they've been the primary agent for the petro surplus recycle, and now they're having liquidity problems And their own stock market and banking system? Where's all their money? It's stolen. We went to China, we went to Saudi Arabia to tell them, don't work with Russia to create a new price outside the dollar. Don't work with China to accept the RMB. And don't try to retrieve your money or we'll have you guys killed. And keep up with your military weapons purchases from the U.S. military industrial complex on your Yemen and ISIS wars. So we're throwing the Saudis under the bus after stealing their gold and stealing their treasury bonds and forcing them into a war with Yemen. What's in Yemen? Oil reserves to replace their depleted Saudi reserves. This is a kill job. We're about to kill off the Saudi regime and make impossible their recovery of $3 to $5 trillion in their savings after we stole their gold. Thank you very much. That kept the gold price down.
All right. There's an interesting time frame that appeared in the news reports today of when these classified Saudi documents will be released in Washington. It's late June, early July.
That's kind of the timing of when I think things are going to break, Rick. This is a scuttle of the Saudi regime. If they don't do exactly what they're told, the prince is going to get murdered. Prince Mohammed bin Salman. He's going to get murdered.
You're talking about the young 30-year-old crown prince.
Yeah, he's hardly the crown prince. He's the unannounced king because his father is he's watching cartoons in the back. He's senile. King Salman is senile. His son is out of control with a love of war, emptying some prisons and giving them two choices. We'll cut your head off, or you can join the ISIS army. I don't really know how I would react to a choice like that. How would you react?
What do you think about the prince's decision to sell Aramco?
Desperation. Don't they own $3 to $5 trillion in treasury bonds? Why do they need cash? Rick, seriously, why do they need cash? They're wealthy because their gold and treasury bonds have been stolen. Why do they need cash? Why is the forward on the Saudi rial currency going haywire? Because they're out of cash. Why are they out of cash? They're wealthy. We threw them under the bus and stole their assets. That's why. They're cutouts for the British, and they've served their purpose. The petrodollar is gone. We have Algeria and now Nigeria, two OPEC nations, now accepting RMB currency for oil. Algeria and Nigeria are both accepting RMB currency for oil. OPEC is now almost gone.
Are you saying that the Saudis are simply being written out of the storyline, out of the script? It's time for them to exit the stage.
Yeah, they'll go back to a Bedouin society with a Mecca. Maybe they could charge a heavy tax for all the pilgrimage folks coming to Mecca and Medina.
So London and New York are done with them, and they're just going to discard them.
If they don't do what they're told, they're going to be murdered. Yeah. And how easy is it to murder a head of state? Well, gosh, ask the Brazilians about Campo. Gosh, ask the Venezuelans about Chavez.
Do you think the Saudis are close to aligning with China, where the Saudis are thinking about dumping the U.S. petrodollar and going with China?
Well, they don't want to get murdered, so they keep the game going. But in 2014 and 15, they had almost monthly what I call love fests, where Saudi officials, economic folks, and Aramco folks, and bankers, and other cultural ministers, once a month meeting in Beijing, 2014 and 15. What was that all about? Well, that confirmed my call in mid-2014 that the Saudis were going to go away as an important player regarding the dollar. The petrodollar was going to wash away. And if the Saudis weren't careful, they're going to be murdered. So then the climax is going to be that the Saudis announce RMB acceptance for oil sales to China. China, I'm hearing, is very angry that they cannot use their treasury bills to buy oil from the Saudis. That is what I'm hearing, Rick. We've already got a situation where the Saudis might not be accepting dollars for oil from certain parties. because they can't get rid of them. And besides, don't they already have $3 to $5 trillion that already have been dishonored by Washington and Wall Street?
The $3 to $5 trillion, are you referring to the treasuries that Saudi Arabia bought since 1973 with the petrodollar deal?
Yes, yes.
And that number is officially top secret in Washington. Supposedly nobody knows.
Oh, it's so full of mucky muck garbage, Rick. If you take a look at the Treasury International Capital Report, the TIC report, you'll see that the OPEC nations own $600 billion worth of treasuries. Why isn't Saudi Arabia listed individually? Because they're not even listed at all. They own $3 to $5 trillion. They don't want $3 to $5 trillion to show up on the TIC report. They'd much rather confuse you with the OPEC nations. Oh, really? Okay, well, that's a bunch of rubbish. Because UAE alone has close to $1 trillion. UAE, United Arab Emirates, alone has close to $1 trillion. They have a very small welfare state and a very big oil production. I was told 2 years ago by The Voice, who had a client from UAE, that they are scared peeing in their pants in Abu Dhabi, UAE, because they owned close to $1 trillion in treasury bonds. That's not even in the TIC report. Now, the Saudis are going away. They've got all kinds of internal problems. You can go on for an hour about their internal problems. They've got all kinds of Islamic reform that's being requested. The women want to be more involved in jobs and education and less to be sex slaves at the home. You've got all kinds of things. You've got princes running around, hundreds and hundreds of princes going around offering business people 10 cents on the dollar to buy their company, and if they don't, they're going to jail for tax violations, which are all pretty much fabricated.
Jim, why did the Saudis sabotage the Qatar meeting to freeze oil production?
I'm not sure. I think because Russia and China said, we don't want you guys to get together and cut deals. You can't really follow much of the Western news. You have to follow the Eastern news, because the Western news is written by Rothschild and Bush and all the Langley boys. They tilt all the news. So if they say that, oh, gosh, the Arabs couldn't come to a consensus in Qatar, well, how about instead Russia told them, we've got a better idea. Work with us, and it might actually save your kingdom and regime. Whereas the Americans are about to kill you off. And the Saudis say, well, you know, we're already doing some constructive things with China with a lot of mutual investment, and we're trying to sell them a piece of Aramco without the United States getting too upset. Asia wants to use the RMB in oil sales. The removal of the Saudi dollar connection on oil is the last nail in the dollar's coffin.
And you think this thing may start coming apart as early as June or July?
Yeah, I think that the Chinese are setting things up right now where the insolvency of the Western financial structures and platforms just cannot support the weight of the debt. Notice that all the fixes for the post-Lehman crises have been more debt and more free money. Free money has the effect of ruining capital structures, because when you introduce new free money, Rick, I've been making this point for a long time now, and it's amazing how few economists latch onto it, because they just don't want to be caught in doing effective economic analysis. If you print out a bunch of money and throw it in the system, the smart players will buy up tangible goods. And that will increase the cost structure and remove the profit line and shut down a business. That's why the economy is deteriorating at an accelerating rate right now in the United States and the West. It's from 5-6 years of QE and hypermonetary inflation, Zimbabwe style. We're in a late stage here. And I don't know exactly how it's going to happen, but I think we have some risks with the energy sector and the credit portfolios for the big banks, they just can't hide it anymore. The Dallas Fed, 2 months ago, I think it was February, they announced, well, they didn't announce. They had a secret meeting because, you know, announcing it would be an honest thing to do. No, the word leaked out from one of the members at the meeting that the Dallas Fed was encouraging the banks not to mark to market the credit portfolios, but instead to work with them on asset sales. And those weren't working well either. They're only getting 30 cents on the dollar on assets like, you know, drilling rigs. Who wants to invest a lot of money in a drilling rig when the price of oil is down near 30 and 40? Okay, so you have energy sector risks for the big banks, but you also have derivative risks because the petrodollar is being dismantled. And what that is the big multi-billion, trillion-dollar contracts linking the dollar, the euro, and the British pound to the oil price. They're all being dismantled. And Bill Holter has called it the dollar margin call. Okay, you're dissolving these huge contracts, and they're denominated in dollars. So the people who own the contracts are saying, well, I want my dollars. Well, that means the big banks have to come up with new dollars. It's demand from new dollars in a margin call on dollar-based debt, dollar-based contracts linking to oil. Very fascinating what's going on. The dollar's not rising due to economic strength of the U.S. economy, which is a real absurd notion that's being promoted by Washington politicians. The dollar is rising because the global economy is deteriorating so rapidly. And other countries like Brazil and Bangladesh and whatever, they can't print money to cover their debts like the Americans can. So QE is preventing the dollar death and assuring other economies and their currencies are declining. And that lifts the relative value of the dollar. You can't say the dollar's strong. You have to say that the other dollar competitors are very weak.
Jim, another topic that Americans would never hear if they watched television news networks for 30 consecutive days, 24 hours a day, they would never hear anything about China's new Silk Road. How important is this new Silk Road?
I think it is a superhighway for the rest of the world, connecting all the East with Europe. Now, notice when they talk about the Silk Road, they say from Vladivostok to Lisbon, Portugal. Vladivostok is the Pacific coast city of Russia. There's a lot of gas production and LNG activity there right now with respect to Japan. Japan's getting involved in the Silk Road in Vladivostok and what they call it, Sakhalin Bay. It's a big port area. Okay, so you got this superhighway, and the Americans like to say, well, I was just connecting the old dead Soviet republics. They'll never amount to anything. They're loaded with resources, and they're not using the dollar, and they're developing with growing GDP. How's the U.S. doing? Well, you know, forget about the press reports. I've been saying now since 2008 the U.S. economy is between a -4 and -6% recession every year. And that's been validated by a number of different places. What's the importance of the Silk Road? It is vital for drawing Europe away from the American interests. It is vital for establishing gold-based trade, and following that will be gold-based banking and a gold-based currency. It's vital for uniting four old empires, three of which have been asleep for a long time, Russia, China, and Persia. The fourth has not been asleep, but has been integrated too closely with the British, and that is India. India's banking policy is written by London and Washington. That's why they're trying to monetize the temple gold right now, because those temple dwellers will never see their gold again. So you have Persia, Russia, China, and India as the four legs of the Eurasian Economic Union, which I like to call the Eurasian Trade Zone.
And if Iran is in this nucleus, that means Saudi Arabia is out.
Yeah, probably, but just watch how China throws a lifeline to the Saudis. I honestly think the Saudi regime is going to fall. I've thought for a while that it's going to be a matter of months. If the Saudi regime falls, you're going to see a lot of disorder, Rick. You're going to see the Saudi kingdom resemble more the chaotic Yemen organization, warlords, Somalia. Riyadh's going to turn into a real fancy-looking Mogadishu. I think you're going to see principalities emerge from Saudi Arabia, where princes are going to say, we've been kicked outside the conference rooms for too long. We're going to take charge of our little sector and ignore the new fake king in Riyadh. And besides, they're broke anyway. Saudi's broke. Their wealth has been stolen. What part of this is confusing? And they're buying military weapons to fight a war in Yemen, committing war crimes, bombing schools, bombing hospitals, and bombing marketplaces, just like the Americans do in Syria. Where do you think the Saudis learn these tactics?
You want to take a few minutes and talk about Syria? Why did Putin suddenly shut down his operation? Was he simply saying, you know, I've accomplished my mission, I'm cutting my losses, I'm leaving, or was there something else happening behind the scenes?
He declared victory. There's no cutting of losses when you won. I think he might have wanted to get out of town before Israel did a false flag attack and blame it on Russia. If Russia's not there, then they couldn't have done it, right?
But there's an interesting thing going on with Netanyahu and Putin. They're meeting and appears to be on friendly terms, whereas Netanyahu and Obama, stare at each other like two alley cats.
Well, who says that Netanyahu and Putin were getting along? The Western press?
Yeah, I heard it on True News. I don't know. I'm just saying, none of us are in those meetings, but they do, the two men have, somewhat of a working relationship. Maybe they're shouting at each other privately behind the doors, but Putin and Netanyahu have some lines of communication.
I don't care. Look, let's take a look at some of the most recent Kremlin meetings, which you put in a chronology. Saudi's Prince Salman and, you left out, the UAE top sheikh both went to the Kremlin to get yelled at, where Putin read them the riot act as quit funding the ISIS terrorists. Okay, that's one. Then another meeting took place with the Saudis in the Kremlin, where the Kremlin offered them a mutual cooperation in setting the oil price outside the dollar. Then you had John Kerry go to the Kremlin with a surrender package regarding the Ukraine war. And now you're telling me that Netanyahu, who is behind ISIS with the British and the Americans, had a friendly meeting with Russia? I don't think so. I think they emerged friendly because they were – have you ever had such a degree of embarrassment that you walk out and you smile? Yeah, I've had that a few times in my life. Usually it's after getting paddled in grade school.
Mm-hmm.
Or mouthing off at a teacher in high school, correcting his errors in front of the class. Yeah, I come out, I got punished, and I left smiling. No, I think Netanyahu got told, we're going to make sure that you're dead in 1 year if you don't start cooperating. Because you're a piece of slime, baby. That's what I think the Russians told him. The Russians are hard-nosed. I love their leaders. Glazyev is their economic advisor. Lavrov is their foreign minister. These guys are tough, hard-nosed people, unlike the U.S. Secretary of State Hillary and the jaw transformation Kerry, who married a murdered husband's wife, Hines. What an interesting story that John Kerry is. Hines was murdered for political reasons. The widow wanted to marry someone John Kerry had a big smile and apparently a lot more to offer the grieving woman whose husband was murdered, along with, you know, a dozen or two dozen other U.S. senators like John Tower of Texas. Murder of U.S. senators is common. It's just not reported because the people who control the press are the ones who order the murders.
Jim, let's talk about the Brexit vote in Great Britain. It's amazing to watch this develop. There's a strong possibility that the people of Great Britain are going to vote next month to, or in June, to leave the European Union. If that happens, what happens this summer?
What happens is that Britain is going to align more closely with the Chinese and tell the Americans, you're expendable. It's already being argued right now. Obama is trying to soothe feelings in London. He actually told the British, we helped save your nation in World War II. We don't want you to do this. You owe us. Do what? Establish a Chinese RMB trading hub? Sell Chinese government debt in London? Sell maybe Italian government debt in London? Portuguese government debt in London? Hungary has sold some of Hungarian government debt in RMB terms. I think Italy is going to sell some of its debt in RMB terms. Portugal will sell some of its debt in RMB terms. So they're trying to attract Chinese investments without having the currency risk. London has a big deficit, especially since the North Sea has had a reduction of something like 70% in its oil output. The British and Norwegians don't have that income anymore. So what are the British going to do? They're going to do what they always do. They're going to throw their muscle around. They're going to offer military weapons. And I think they're going to sell out the Americans. It's going to be a very big point in history. The Chinese are offering them all kinds of lifelines. And the British just might say, United States, what have you done for us lately? Not much. Now, this is a turning point, Rick. I thought for quite a while, for 2 years, that the Germans are going to break away from the U.S. fold. And it's a very difficult and nettlesome process to happen. But it could be that the British move away a little more quickly than the Germans.
Well, you know, that Brexit vote right now is scheduled for June 23rd. And once again, we're talking about the end of June.
Do you know, is this a vote across the population or a vote in the parliament?
No, this is a nationwide vote. It's a referendum.
Okay, then it could be falsified like most votes take place in the United States and England. Maybe they'll learn how to rig the vote like they have in the United States.
Yeah, especially if they hire a company owned by George Soros to count the votes.
Yeah, well, Diebold is already on the hot seat. There are numerous YouTubes out there where vote counting devices were shown to be false, and a couple states have already now thrown out some of the results of their primaries. So we've now have a vote rigging chaos going on in the United States. So maybe the British will learn something, take a page from U.S. voter fraud science, and rig their vote. Vote rigging is common.
Okay, Obama threatened the British people. He said, if you know, you people vote to leave the European Union, bad stuff's going to happen to you. You're going to be at the back of the line when it comes to trade deals. I mean, he did his finger wagging deal like he always does, and read them the Riot Act. Why is Obama bothered about whether the British people stay in the European Union?
Because the U.S. is on the edge, on the verge of losing all of Europe to the Eurasian Trade Zone. If the Eurasian Trade Zone comes to be, which George Orwell wrote about as a warning something like 80, 90 years ago, then Eurasia would take control and get the upper hand over Oceania. Oceania is the British-American maritime dominance. The British are on the verge of joining Europe, which will join ranks with Russia and China in the Eurasian trade zone, linking Vladivostok, Russia, to Lisbon, Portugal. They're just across the channel. Why would they want to bother with the systemic breakdown in the United States with voter fraud and gigantic debt, insolvent banks? Why would they want to link up with the falling United States when they can link up with the rising China and Russia?
If the people vote to leave the European Union and Obama follows through with his threats of retaliation, would that not drive Britain into the arms of Russia and China?
Exactly. Look, how many policy errors has the Obama administration and the Bush administration made? The Iran sanctions backfired. The Iran nuclear talks were a formal agreement for the Americans to save face after Israeli, American, and British propaganda became exposed. How'd that work out, foreign policy? How did the Syrian war work out? How did pressure with the Egyptian, I can't think of his name. We had a backfire in Egypt where now they're best friends with Russia. The policy with respect to the Saudis has also been a total failure. There's not a single policy success of the Obama administration. Every single thing he touches turns to feces. So now they're going to pressure the British and force them into the arms of Russia and China. I hope Obama makes a very big priority in managing Germany, because that will turn out to be a failure also. And it is.
Do you expect Germany to also follow in the path to Shanghai and Moscow?
Yeah, they're going to they have connections with both. They've seen a drop off in their exports to China. China's, I think, importing more from Japanese industry and less from German industry. I was told by The Voice 2 years ago that there are 5,000 companies in Germany doing business in Russia. And they don't want to lose that. Right now, this month, you had the president of Siemens, which is like their giant General Electric and AT&T rolled into one. It's an electronics and a communications company. Siemens just made a statement, we want an end to these stupid sanctions. We don't want automatic renewal of the German sanctions, the European sanctions that Germany applies, against Russia. He didn't say there's no justification. He said they're doing too much damage. And besides, why should they be automatic? Shouldn't they be voted upon? No. Europe is not a democracy. Europe is a gigantic fascist state run by the European Commission, unelected people. They're trying to do a trade pact, the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership, TTIP, trying to jam it down. Obama went to Germany to jam down the TTIP trade pact down their throats. Even though 40 cities had close to 100,000 people in each city demonstrate against it.
Yeah, and the American people didn't see those scenes on the news channels either.
No, but Hat Trick Letter subscribers did.
Hey, I'm going to read to you the opening sentence from Bloomberg News. This story just came out a few minutes ago. ExxonMobil was demoted from the top credit rating by Standard & Poor's for the first time since the Great Depression, as the collapse of the biggest oil market rally in history strangled cash flows. Are we actually going to see giant oil companies like ExxonMobil teetering on insolvency at some point?
It could be. Why do you think the Rockefeller family sold 80 to 85% of their energy assets in 2014 and 15? It's not a Rockefeller company anymore, Rick.
I know.
So they can let it go, right?
My guess is they either anticipate buying it back for pennies on the dollar, or they know of a new energy source that's going to be released.
I think it's a combination of new energy sources and green energy. Renewables are going to make a very big move with a complete Eastern support. China is now the biggest installer of solar panels in the world. You can't keep this down. The energy sector implosion is not stoppable. If there were no new energy source potentials, the oil price would have rebounded by now. That's a very simple point to make. You look back, you hear some of the idiots out there saying, well, gosh, back in 2009, it bounced back really well. This isn't 2009. And people who think that this is 2009 redux, the only thing that's similar now is that the whole system's breaking all over again because we didn't fix anything. We didn't even try to fix anything. We preserved the big banks, the too big to fail policy. We printed money to make sure they were plenty liquid. And we didn't go back to the gold standard, Rick.
If you had to guess where the next systemic Lehman Brothers meltdown will originate, what would you name?
Deutsche Bank and HSBC. Deutsche Bank is going to result in lots of different Southern European bank failures, like in Italy and Portugal and Spain. But HSBC might be the fracture from the gold market.
All right, let's bring some comedy into the discussion. We'll talk about the presidential election. Do you think the American people actually, will we make it to the November election before a crisis?
I kind of doubt it. I need to emphasize something to you, Rick. I don't follow third world politics, so I don't waste my time watching the poll rigging. Hillary managed to buy off poll rigging before the primaries to make herself look good. If you've got a high poll ranking, you tend to get a better primary vote. So I don't follow third world politics, period.
For those of us who are currently living in a third world nation, and you had to speculate, who do you think would lead this third world nation after November?
Can I say I don't care?
Sure, you can say it.
I don't care.
It doesn't matter, does it?
It's a third world country. Who cares? Who cares what the president of Zimbabwe is? Do you?
No, not really.
If you live there, you might, and that's the only reason you care about this godforsaken country. I don't care who the president is. I care which general will be in charge of martial law. I think his name is Dunford. So, who's going to win? I think Dunford's going to win.
Why do you speculate that General Dunford is going to be ruling the nation?
Well, if you declare martial law, who cares who the president is? Do you know what martial law is?
Sure.
I mean, I don't need to be insulting here, but if there's martial law declared, the president doesn't mean anything. The Congress doesn't mean anything. It's a general military tribunal that matters. You don't go, you move from common law to military law. Looters will be shot. Martial law.
You're making a very good point because a lot of talk show hosts talk about Obama calling for martial law. The truth is, as you just pointed out, if there's martial law, it's not Obama or the president that's instituting martial law. It is a military tribunal that calls for martial law and implements it.
Obama might want to lead the martial law movement on the side wearing a dress.
Well, he would have toilet rights. He could use any toilet of his choice.
I mean, you want it to become comedy, and I'll make it comedy. I mean, we got a gay man couple occupying the White House, having gay parties all over the place, and broke the eye of Senator Reid, forcing him into retirement. There are lots and lots of things going on here.
You forgot to mention they beat up Senator Reid's brother the same week.
Well, I didn't know about that. Thanks for pointing that out. We've got Putin calls the Western leaders mutants. Why does he do that? Why does he call Western leaders mutants? He's in particular talking about Western Europe, British, and Americans. Because they're a bunch of pedophiles, Satanists, and gays. Okay, is the country ready to go from a gay man president with a gay man wife in an arranged marriage by Reverend Wright in Chicago for the cost of $25,000. Are they ready to move from that to a lesbian woman president?
I think so.
Whose husband makes votes all the time not to be with Hillary in bed. Now, I think it's a total joke. I don't waste my time studying it. I do hear things that happen. I mean, you have an upstanding audience. I don't want to get, you know, really off color in some stories, but I know a fellow who has significant contact with Secret Service who know a lot about what Bill and Hillary did in the White House. And it's some sickening stuff. These are very sick people. And the central bankers and the Wall Street bankers are of the same type. And I think they're going to get swept out like yesterday's newspaper that used to serve as liners in the bird cages. And it's going to be fun to watch it, except that they're going to sabotage a lot of things. And I think the banking system is going to be really, really struggling in the United States. And I'm concerned about a lot of things because I got friends there and I've, you know, my income stream comes from there. The Hattrick Letter is a Ohio-based company.
Have you thought that through?
Yeah, I don't like talking much about it.
Okay.
Yeah, I have thought it through, and I'll just give you a summary statement. If the United States government accepts the Chinese offer of leasing gold and having a legitimate currency, the Hattrick Letter is going to be fine. If they don't, and it's heavily devalued, I don't know what's going to happen, Rick.
How does this work? If China leases gold to the Federal Reserve, how does this work?
Well, China basically says, we've got 10,000 tons of gold. We'll lease it to you. We will not put it on U.S. soil where you guys would steal it like you steal everything not nailed down. We'll keep it in a foreign location and maybe not even tell you where it is, but through contractual obligations, we will back your new treasury note dollar. And in return for this, we want favorable policies for asset acquisition inside the United States. I'm talking about industries, farms, commercial buildings, et cetera, ports. They already own most of the ports. I don't think they own the New York, New Jersey, Philadelphia port system. They own the Pacific ports in California and, you know, Seattle and Vancouver, but that's Canada. The Chinese would then say, we want to write your banking policy. We want to write your trade policy. We want to write your immigration policy. And we want to write your war policy, which is basically shutting it down. In other words, the Chinese would become a member of the tribunal to dictate American policy or dictate policy within the United States.
China would allow the United States to continue to operate at a reduced level, a reduced standard of living, but without a Mad Max type of scenario. And in return, China gets basically to purchase the assets of the USA.
And one-third of all output. Take, for example, the southwestern farms that grow alfalfa. This has been the case for over 2 years. I'm talking about Arizona, New Mexico, Texas, California. Alfalfa farms export one-third of their hay feed to China for livestock feed. I did a feature a few months ago, I think it was September or October, of the Chinese free trade zone activity in the United States. And one company in Alabama was making copper tubing, probably still does. They employ a lot of people, like 200, 250 people. They got some nice grants for, you know, reduced property taxes or things like that, income tax abeyance for maybe a year or two. But the upshoot, I went immediately for what do they produce and where does it go? And there you had it. One-third of all the copper tubing output went to China. So the investment of China in the United States is to secure output, but at the same time, it will help to relieve the $500 billion trade deficit on an annual basis. And relieving that trade deficit, narrowing that trade deficit, reducing that trade deficit, that's exactly how you bring about a stable new currency. So the Chinese deal could actually be positive for both sides. I like the way you put that. Reduce standard of living in return for no Mad Max scenario. What I like to say is the Chinese colonization would take place, and the rub, the negative side, would be lower income and very reduced fringe benefits like health coverage, pensions. The pension system in the United States is being destroyed right now. Right now. So China's got something to offer, Rick, and I think what's going to happen is the U.S. is going to reject it, and then they're going to be staring at the 11th hour and realizing third world is right around the corner at 2 a.m., and they'll decide, well, maybe we should take that rush, that Chinese deal, and maybe we could just work out some better details where some of the U.S. elite can take a nice, healthy bribe on every single table that the Chinese sit at.
Jim, one final question. What's the possibility that the White Dragon Society and the other old dynasty money leaders will disband the Chinese Communist Party and move China into a new age of government?
This is something I'm not an expert in, and I don't like trying to sound really knowledgeable, but I got my opinion, and it's not based on great study, but I think you're going to gradually see the Chinese Communist Party system go away. And what you might see instead is a couple of wings within the Chinese Communist Party might come forward and appear to be alternatives or factions. And before you know it, the Chinese Communist Party has many sides. And then you'll have to define to me what the Chinese Communist Party means. Because if it has many sides and many policies and many ideologies and many priorities, then I don't know what the Chinese Communist Party means. And it's kind of like saying, well, the U.S. Capitalist Party has two sides, the Democrats and the Republicans, and the independents are kind of small. All right, so the American Capitalist Society has different sides.
But if China is going to rule the world, if they're going to lead the world, they're going to have to change.
I think they already are in rather rapid style, but some of it's not well reported because President Xi is trying to put in prison the previous president. These are not well-known things, Rick.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to put him in jail, the previous guy in jail. I can't think of his name.
Well, same thing's going on in Panama.
Yeah. I'd like to see the same thing happen in the United States. Bush and Clinton thrown in jail.
I've had dreams about it.
They stole $1.6 trillion from Fannie Mae, blew up the Murrah building in Oklahoma City in 95 to cover it up. A lot of death. That's a mass murder crime scene. That's grand larceny. That's not grand larceny. That's super grand larceny. I mean, when you saw the Tony Soprano and the HBO series on the mob in New Jersey, they did a few shows on the Fannie Mae fraud. Well, Clinton and Bush did one better. They just stole money straight out of the till. They didn't bother with phony properties and appraisals. They just stole the money and tried to kill the auditor who revealed it. Her name was Catherine Austin Fitz. Now, I'd like to see some justice in the United States because we haven't had any for a long time. I mean, we got a crime scene right now going on in Oregon with that Brady farm or Bundy farm or whatever it's called. That's a uranium farm that the Clinton Foundation wants to own. They'd like to kill them all and take the property and sell the uranium to Russia like they have been doing for the last 10 years. I'd like to see Hillary thrown in jail. I got a great sign that I saw, and I kept it on my computer. I support Hillary. And then in smaller print, for prison.
That's right. Hillary for prison, 2016. Jim Willey, my guest today. The newsletter is the Hat Trick Letter. And there's only one place to subscribe to it. It's at goldenjackass.com. Jim, thank you for spending this time with me today.
It's a pleasure as always, Rick. It's always enlightening and enjoyable to speak with intelligent hosts who are well-informed.
That's because I read the Hat Trick Letter.
No, I think you do a lot more than that. I think that's a small part of some of your research. Not real smart. I mean, you got a lot of different sources, Rick. You do a lot of things.
Well, we've been working at it for quite some time, just like you.
It's always enjoyable, and I wish you folks well. And thanks to Marshall for setting this up.
All right. Thank you, Jim.
All right. Bye now.
Well, let's briefly recap some of the key points Jim Willey made in this 90-plus minute interview. He said that there is a paradigm shift in motion right now of wealth and power moving from the West to the East. He anticipates some type of systemic Lehman Brothers type of crisis will happen very soon. He believes that China is wrestling with the West to gain control of the global gold market. He expects China to unveil a RMB-based gold futures contract. He said China will ping the U.S. financial system overnight by suddenly valuing gold and silver on the Shanghai market higher than the New York market. It will be the opening shot in the Chinese-Russian game plan to end the West's manipulation of the prices of precious metals. He also said that ancient empires are awakening simultaneously. Persia, which is modern-day Iran, China, Russia, and India. Those four nations will form the nucleus of the Euro-Asian trade zone. Britain will exit the EU and eventually align with Russia and China. He expects the same thing for Germany. Regarding the flurry of high-level meetings involving the Federal Reserve and other officials, Jim said that patriarchal leaders of old Chinese dynasties convened the meeting of Yellen, Obama, and Biden and told them what is going to happen to the U.S. dollar very soon. He said that they were informed that the U.S. dollar will not be accepted around the world for global trade. Jim also expects that the Rothschild-controlled central bank franchise system will be dissolved, that gold should be priced at $10,000 or higher per ounce, and that the Rothschild-Luciferian cabal is finished with the Saudi royal family, will dump them, and eventually murder some of them. Now, concerning this last point, I think it's interesting that 15 years after the September 11 attacks, high-level Washington officials and the establishment news media are suddenly demanding that Barack Obama declassify 28 pages from congressional investigations that allegedly blame the Saudi royal family for assisting the 19 hijackers who flew aircraft into buildings in New York City and Washington. Why now? Why 15 years after the 9/11 attacks? Why is there clamor now to release the documents? I believe the cabal needs a scapegoat to blame for a banking system implosion, which would be caused by Saudi Arabia canceling the petrodollar. Jim briefly hinted that late June or early July could be the time that trouble intensifies in financial markets. Late June or early July also is the estimated timeline when Obama may release the classified documents that link Saudi Arabia with the 9/11 attacks. How convenient. What a cover story. Here's what I mean. We know that Paul Ryan and a delegation of congressional leaders and Defense Secretary Ash Carter and Barack Obama traveled to Riyadh to meet with the Saudi king and his son, the Crown Prince. We can only assume that the purpose of so many high-level Washington officials running off to Saudi Arabia was to stop Saudi Arabia from dumping the U.S. petrodollar deal and joining up with China. Immediately after the meetings, the news media in the U.S. started talking about Obama releasing the classified 9/11 documents that would implicate Saudi Arabia. If Saudi Arabia dumps the dollar and hitches its wagon to the Chinese star, it would immediately spark a financial panic in America. Now, we're told today that Obama may release those documents in June. So consider this scenario. Obama, Paul Ryan, Ash Carter, and others failed to convince the Saudis not to ditch the U.S. petrodollar deal negotiated by Henry Kissinger in 1973. Washington realizes that the petrodollar is finished, and therefore Obama releases the September 11 documents. The news media whips up fury in America against the Saudi royal family. Saudi Arabia publicly severs its relationship with Washington and teams up with Beijing. The American people are told that it was done in retaliation for Obama releasing the documents. The markets go berserk. Financial panic grips the USA. Obama's forced to close the banks. Washington and the news media blame Saudi Arabia for the financial panic. A bloodlust is turned loose in America. The public demands the destruction of Saudi Arabia and the execution of its leaders. The USA launches a military attack on Riyadh. U.S. special forces hunt down and assassinate members of the Saudi royal family. Meanwhile, power, money, and influence flood out of America and go east, and a new world order is born. Potentially, we could be only months away from such a scenario. This is probably a good place in the program to remind you that HeavensHarvest.com is still offering free shipping to True News fans who order emergency preparedness food. Last time I checked, the promo code was still working. Free shipping. You might want to take Clayton up on that offer and get yourself some of that food, because things could go crazy in a matter of months if this scenario plays out. My friend, the change will come suddenly and violently. Washington will not prepare you for it. Instead, they will lie to you every day and tell you everything is great in the Obama economic recovery. And my guest tomorrow will be Nomi Prinz, and we will continue this conversation about the breakup of the Western financial system. You've been listening to True News. We are Heaven's News Network, reporting the countdown to the second coming of Jesus Christ. We appreciate your prayers and financial support. I love you. I'll see you tomorrow.